listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Studies have shown that most human beings pay more attention to the negative thoughts they have than to the positive. Considering that we humans think 60 to 70,000 thoughts every day, that's an awful lot of negativity. Today, I'm talking with Aura Nadrich about how to banish negative thoughts and take back your life. She's offering one simple question that can change the way you think forever. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. We welcome your questions and your comments. So if you have comments, put them on the chat on Blog Talk Radio or the Emotional Pro radio show page. And we also have a toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Aura Nadrich is a certified life coach, certified mindfulness meditation teacher, and she's the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. You can learn more about Aura at auranadrich.com. That's auranadrich.com. And Aura Nadrich, welcome to Full Power Living.
Hi, Eileen. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So let's start with the basics. What is a negative thought?
Well, I think we know what a negative thought feels like in that it doesn't usually make us feel very good. Do you know? Now, some people don't even recognize that. It's usually something that is sabotaging, undermining, makes you feel bad either about yourself or how you perceive another person or a situation. So I say it's not something that usually makes us feel very good about ourselves or how we view other people in other situations.
Right. And what I've learned is that they don't come out of the present. They're really either from the past, most likely from the past, or sometimes from the future. Do you agree?
Absolutely. That's one of the questions I have of the Says Who method, which is seven questions to ask yourself to get to know your negative and fear-based thoughts better. And yes, oftentimes many of the thoughts that we hold on to, which means they persist and they stay constant or repetitive in our minds, are oftentimes something out of the past, which we know has come and gone, or it's a worry or concern about the future, which has not yet happened.
Right. And I learned many years ago, my daughter's 46 now, but when she was about 8 or 9, she started bringing a hairbrush to me in the kitchen when I was making breakfast and asked me to fix her hair. And I found myself getting angry with her. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I went ahead and fixed her hair in the kitchen. It took me a couple times of doing that to realize that I was getting angry about something that I thought shouldn't happen, but it really didn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it wasn't my thing. So I just said, "Whose voice is that?" And it turns out it was my grandmother's. I lived with my grandmother on the farm when I was 5, and my grandfather and I would go out and milk the cow, and I would pet the kitties. And when I would walk into the house, she would say, "Eileen, you wash your hands and shake yourself off because I don't want a hair in my kitchen." Is that the kind of thing? I mean, that's another form of a negative thought that comes in from the past, is it?
Absolutely, and that is such a great story. And I call it connecting the dots, you know, because when we ask ourselves that question, which is the second question of the Says Who method, have I heard someone say this thought before? It's so great to be able to identify the origin of that thought, because what it does is it starts to dismantle it and it starts to really separate ourselves from the other person that introduced that thought to us, and to recognize that it's had a hold on us for a very long time and really can affect the quality of even a moment that we're having, something like you described with your daughter, which is a really sweet moment. And we know those moments are very precious, that, you know, like you just said, she's 46 years old now. The time flies by so fast. We don't want those thoughts to interfere with the experience of something that could be really lovely for us, and it gets ruined and spoiled by a thought that doesn't even belong to us.
That is really a nice way. It almost makes me sad to hear you say that. That's a lovely way of framing it. But still, we tend to hear those negative thoughts the loudest. And I know you're an advocate of cognitive behavioral thought. So talk about that in terms of the format in which you're looking at this.
Well, for me, the cognitive aspect of it is to connect that thought to some, to understand whether it's real or not. And oftentimes the thought, and the thought that we attach ourselves to, which is negative, is, you know, unless we really understand where that thought comes from. And again, your example is a perfect, you know, way of understanding how a thought that has a lot of energy can even make us angry, irritated, impatient, all those things. You can connect it to something that can dispel that thought and begin to break it down so that you don't have the same kind of energy. Now, yes, you know, as you described in the introduction, and it's in my book, we do think, statistics say, we think between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day, which is so staggering, and that so many of those thoughts do not serve our well-being. So really what Says Who offers up is to come to understand our thinking mind better, and to know that, yes, we will think negative thoughts, they will come and go, but not to attach ourselves to those thoughts, and to give us the tools and the skill set, which the Says Who method does, to know how to do that, so that we don't attach ourselves to those thoughts so readily.
Well, you know, I've been a psychotherapist for 44 years, and I often have people come into my office and they protest. They say their mind is taken over by negative thoughts or expectations so fast that they don't have time to intercede and think differently. It's like the negative thoughts crowd in and shove everything else aside.
Yes, they do. They do. I say in the book, Eileen, they're like imposters, trespassers. You know, and I say also in the book that if a trespasser comes onto your property, you don't say, oh, hey, hi, come on in. Help yourself to whatever you want. You say, get off my property. And I want to really introduce that concept that, yes, sometimes it feels like those thoughts take you over and, you know, you don't have time to, you know, people will say, well, how do I have time to even do what you're suggesting, because they take me over. And in the book, I'm also mentioned, you feel like a hostage to your own thinking mind. But we must take into consideration that we are the ones that are thinking these thoughts up. It's not like some little person crawls into our head and starts to rearrange our thoughts like furniture. We are the creator of those thoughts, and I want people to really be with that idea, like, huh, so I'm thinking these thoughts up. Sometimes it feels like it's coming out of left field, and they do feel that way. I recently gave an example of for myself, that I was running up the stairs coming home, and a random thought just popped into my head. I was like, what is that thought? So what I suggest in the book is to become the observer, to start to train yourself to be the observer, the witness of your own mind. And when we do that, it's like taking a beat. It's like taking a breath. Ah, okay, huh, that's an interesting thought that just popped up in my head. What is that about? What is it trying to tell me? What does it want from me? Why does it feel so agitating and annoying? You know, it's an inquiry. This is what I've written. It's an inquiry. It's to start to know your thinking mind in a different way, a more intimate way, a more clear understanding of how this thinking process works.
Now, one of the things that interests me is the tie-in with beliefs. I'm thinking of a father, for example, whose adult child, is taking a break from the relationship. And the father believes that this is just wrong to ever happen in a family, and therefore does not stop thinking about how to reconnect with this child of his, this adult child. So how do beliefs tie in there?
Well, I say that, you know, thoughts create emotions, create beliefs, create reality. Again, connect those dots. Do you know? And beliefs, as we know, are very strong, very powerful. And not only do those beliefs have a strong hold on us, they can impose on someone else. Our beliefs can be, you know, something that, like this example that you're describing, that is the father's belief. And that's valid. That may be very much what he believes is true. It's when we enforce and impose and insist our beliefs on someone else who might be having a different experience than we are. Maybe his son, I don't know all the particulars, but maybe his son needs to take a break for reasons that he believes serves his well-being. Do you know? We have to really take into consideration that everybody has their own beliefs, their own truths, their own thoughts that they hold and, you know, in their mind. And we really cannot just, you know, decide for someone else that they should believe exactly what we believe. You know, these are personal decisions. So I really think in that particular instance, if his son needs to take that break, and if the father keeps imposing his belief onto his son, that's not right, it's wrong, or whatever, however he's articulating it, I really think that that's just not fair to another human being. You know, maybe the conversation, maybe the dialogue can be about how do we really share our beliefs with one another without such harsh judgment. You know, we look at the world today and it's just riddled with so much of that, of how we impose our beliefs on one another. And it can turn very, you know, very ugly very quickly. Do you know, I'm right, you're wrong. I believe this is true and how you believe is not true. And, you know, we see that whole macro-microcosm of that reality going on daily.
Mm-hmm. So I just love the consciousness revolution we're going through now. You can't do this without becoming conscious of your own self. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where mindfulness comes into play, in that it's having awareness. You know, it's being present and in the moment that you are in, and to be able to see it clearly. Do you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have found one of the hardest things for me to do, I'm getting a handle on it now, but one of the hardest is to actually remember that other people have their own things that are going on with them, and that the way I see it is not necessarily the way it's happening for them.
Exactly.
That's difficult, yeah.
Yes, and that, you know, when we have a thought that comes up, I mean, people, you know, might work with clients, and, you know, lately the thing that I've been working on with several people is triggers. They're triggered. Those are feelings that you experience when something's bothering you, that somebody you perceive is doing something to you that triggers a reaction in you, an impulse in you. And again, being the observer, you know, because what you may be experiencing, why what someone said to you is triggering you, is personal to you. You know, it doesn't mean that maybe even the person said something wrong again, you know, or maybe they did, but how do you respond to that? We have to look deeper into why our reactions or why our thoughts turn negative so quickly.
Right. In my anger classes, I sometimes point out that an oldest child in a family will get angry if people mess with their things. A youngest child will get angry if people tell them what to do, and a middle child gets angry if they're ignored.
So, right.
That's sort of a picture of, you know, what could be going on with other people.
Exactly.
So now you've developed the Who Says method, and I want to go into it in our next section of the show. I want to go into it a little more deeply, but the idea is that you conduct an inquiry, and the other part that intrigues me is you say that it works with fearful, judgmental, and worried thoughts as well.
Yes. You can pretty much plug in the Says Who method to just about any kind of thought and situation, for sure.
So what we're doing then is helping ourselves to turn around and do an inquiry to whatever kind of thought or emotion that's connected with a thought comes up, and thereby we reveal it, and it begins to dissipate. Is that accurate?
Exactly. Correct. Yeah, it's, you start to deconstruct it, to dismantle it, to take the charge off of it, you know, to take all that hot energy off of a thought that just sometimes feels like, as you said earlier, takes you over, and you feel like you're a hostage to this thought that, again, we need to remind ourselves that we are creating that thought. We're in the power position. You know, it's fascinating to me that people think, yes, I know that it can feel like a thought has power over you, but you have to remind yourself, which is you will come to know in the book, Says Who, that you are the creator and master of your internal dialogue. You're thinking these up. So you have the ability, the power to decide to let it go or to dismantle it or to take the charge off of it.
Well, so our thoughts focus our attention in a particular place. And my learning is that whatever we pay attention to, that grows. So
yes,
that's
definitely
part of what you're working with also.
Yes. Yeah, because, you know, again, you know, starting in the very beginning, the first step being that I want people to allow themselves to be the observer so that when you get a thought that comes up, you can acknowledge it, which is important. You know, when you start to do these, you know, basic steps, you begin to see a process happening and unfolding through this inquiry that you're not so at the effect of that thought. You can work with it. It's workable. You know, and I find it all rather exciting personally. It's like, oh, I can have a whole new relationship to my thinking mind. That's exciting. You know, we have these very powerful things called our mind. And again, thousands and thousands of thoughts are going in and out of it daily. You can be the orchestrator. You can be the conductor, the creator, and ultimately the master of that process.
Wow. That's a lot of power. Well,
we are powerful. We are powerful for sure.
Well, I want to go into the Who Says method in more detail after our break, which is now, and we're going to find out exactly how asking Who Says pulls you out of negative thinking. You're listening to Full Power Living, and I'm talking with Aura Nadrich, who's a certified life coach. We'll be right back.
You and everyone you know have been born to learn. All humans are on Earth to attend school. People know this intuitively, but they don't really live by it. And now you can. I'm Eileen Dillon. Born to Learn is the title of my latest book, available at emotionalpro.com. The result of 30 years of investigation, which gives you the big picture and the instruction book. Born to Learn gives you information you need to turn your problems into puzzles and then solve them. Life is kinder when we complete our homework assignments. Start today. Order Born to Learn at emotionalpro.com and get a leg up on your life.
So welcome back here on Full Power Living. I want you to call in to talk with my guest today, Aura Nadrich, who's a certified life coach and mindfulness meditation teacher, and she's also author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And that number is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Now, I have a couple of announcements. Next week on Full Power Living, I'm talking with a very dedicated man, Eric Wall-Robinstein, who is helping American veterans wage inner peace with PTSD. He's helping people quell the fears and nightmares and anxiety that results from serving in war zones in the military through simple means and related to what we're talking about today. Using mindfulness and other tools, and he's having great success in changing their experience. So listen next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time and tell your friends and family to listen too. We've got a lot of wonderful shows scheduled for you, so go to our homepage on emotionalpro.com, click subscribe, and we'll put you on the list so you get notification of our upcoming events and pick up your free gift while you're there. Today, I'm talking with Aura Nadrich, the author of Says Who. She's a certified life coach and a certified mindfulness meditation teacher. And Aura, before we dip into the method itself, what got you interested in this area?
Well, my personal story is that when I was not quite 15 years old, my sister had a nervous breakdown. And it was very, very devastating. And you spoke about, you know, the order of children. I was the youngest of four children, and that was just so devastating. And it was also very traumatic for me. I went into complete fight or flight when that happened. And when it occurred, when we go into fight or flight, as you know, all sorts of thoughts rush to the foreground of our mind. We feel very threatened, or that our survival is really, you know, in danger. And so the thought that came up for me immediately was that, oh, my God, this is going to happen to me. And that's the thought that took hold in my psyche. And it took a hold in there quite strongly. And I didn't realize it, but that it sort of got pushed down. And I go into that a lot into the book about, you know, how we push our thoughts down into our subconscious. And I call that like the basement, the storage room of our thoughts and memories and things that get pretty much set there unless we go in and clean it out. Well, that got stored into my subconscious. And what happened is that I started to feel the symptoms and what I also describe as the side effects of a thought that I had buried inside myself. And as a result, I started to get anxiety. And it grew and grew and grew. And I was disconnected from a thought that, again, I had buried in my mind. And it took me on a very deep psycho-spiritual journey to understand why I was experiencing this. I wanted to get to the bottom of it, only to realize that that was what I had come face-to-face with a thought that had taken hold in my mind and affected the quality of my life for quite some time. So fast forward to many years later, when I became a certified life coach and I started to see my clients, and I started to see a similar pattern. Now, these were adults. You know, that happened to me when I was a young woman. And it was one client in particular who had come to me, and she was on a very sort of what seemed to be a positive upward mobile trajectory in her life. She was starting a new business. And in our session together, out of the blue, she blurted out, "I'm afraid I'm going to be homeless." Mm. And I had such an aha moment right then and there. I thought, I feel like I'm in the presence of somebody with two thinking minds, one positive, one wanting to move forward onto, again, this positive trajectory, and then this other one that is wanting to sabotage and undermine and frighten her to do that. And right then and there I went, oh, I know that one. I've been there. I know that. And so what came up for me in that exact moment that she said that was, says who? Who said you're going to be homeless? Where did that thought come from? And that was an incredibly powerful inquiry that I had asked her, which then connected her to the fact that her father used to say that a lot when she was growing up, because he had had a history of some unsuccessful, you know, businesses, and that was afraid that they were going to become homeless. He used to say that around the dinner table, and it used to petrify her. And she recognized, she then had her aha moment that she had walked around for most of her life with that boogeyman thought. And that was the beginning of Says Who, where I knew I was on to something.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really interesting. You remind me, years ago I was having an argument with my husband, 40 years ago, and I became hysterical, stomped into my bedroom and slammed the door, And immediately in my head, the thought came up, Eileen, you're hysterical. And I go, you're right, I'm hysterical. And then the voice in my head said, but you're not the hysterical type. And it turned out that I was behaving exactly as my stepmother had behaved in arguments with my father. So these things get planted, these thoughts that go down to the basement.
Yes, and yes, definitely.
It's sobering to think about how much could be lurking in there. But the nice part, the good part, is that once I, like your method says, once I acknowledged where that was coming from, I didn't have to do it anymore.
Yes.
That was great.
I know. This is what's so wonderful about this process, and I so am enjoying your stories because they seem so connected to Says Who for me, in that once we become, have an awareness again, that mindfulness, that awareness of, you know, connecting the dots, like, oh, I'm behaving like, you know, my stepmother. You know, how many new moms will say, I was saying this to my child, and I realized, oh, my God, I've turned into my mother. You know, I'm talking like my mother. And so when you catch yourself, which the Says Who pretty much method expedites that process, you start to see how doable this is. You know, and I say, go easy on yourself. You know, don't beat yourself up in the process because that's counterproductive. But, you know, you start to get to know your whole thoughts, your thinking mind in such a new way that I'm telling people they will enjoy it. It starts to, you know, sometimes you can even find yourself laughing like those new mothers that will go, oh, my God, I said to my child, blah, 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 and I sounded just like my mother. And they start laughing, you know.
And very often it's something we hated that our mother said, right?
Right. But again, you take the charge off of it. You know, look, life is serious enough. We know that. And our thoughts can be rather serious and rather, you know, intense. So I want people to go into this process with, you know, you're taking a deep dive into your thinking mind, but it can also be not this heavy, intense experience. You might find yourself laughing and going, oh, my God, wow, look at that. Do you know?
Yeah, that'd be great. So could we use the story that I gave you about my daughter bringing the hairbrush to me for you to illustrate the steps? You say, says who? And in this case, says my grandmother. And then
right, what? Right. Well, you know, the thought that may have come into your mind, Eileen, when she came in could have been like, oh, you know, here she is again, you know, asking me to brush her hair. And if you really go into the observation mode, as I talk about, and go, oh, I have a lot of energy on that, you know, says who? Who is saying that thought in my mind? Well, I am. So you're acknowledging it. You're owning the fact that you're saying, you know, it could be a myriad of things you may have said. I don't know. It could be, you know, a parent can say, oh, this little brat, you know, she's bugging me again while I'm trying to cook dinner. There's a lot of things we can tell ourselves. So when we acknowledge that thought, we're identifying it, that thought is existing in our mind at that exact moment. And so the second question, which would really pertain to your connecting that to your grandmother, is, have I heard someone say this thought before? Well, if you ask yourself that right away, for the most part, people that I've worked with will go, oh, the minute I asked myself that, I right away thought, oh, my father, my sister, my brother, the bully on the schoolyard, my fourth grade teacher. I mean, the memory just kind of comes up really pretty quickly oftentimes, you know, because you can even remember what it felt like when that person said that to you. It could have felt shaming. It could have felt belittling, berating when they said that to you. So you're identifying that this is not your original thought. This was said by someone else. Would you like me to continue with the questions?
Yes.
The third question to ask yourself is, do I like the thought? Well, again, connecting that to your feeling agitated or annoyed by, you know, your daughter asking you to brush her hair, you can say, well, I don't, you know, do I like feeling or thinking a thought that is making me feel not so good about my daughter right this minute? I don't really like this thought. Or do you like thinking a thought that could be whatever you're telling yourself in that moment, like, oh, she's so this, and oh, she's so that, or oh, I'm not a good parent. I mean, it can turn itself on you. You can say, oh, I'm a terrible parent. Well, you know, because that's just something that came to me right now, is how it can go in reverse against you. That thought that you may be feeling towards someone else can make you feel bad about yourself. And so you could say, well, I don't really like this thought. So I'm thinking a thought that I don't even like. I worked with somebody who was really on what I call the hamster wheel of a negative thought, and they were really plugged in. And this was one of the sessions that I had. And I said, can I ask you something? And she said, sure. And I said, do you like that thought? And her eyes widened like saucers. And she said, no, I don't like this thought. As a matter of fact, not only do I not like it, I hate it. I hate this thought. Do you know? So again, it's like, the realization, the logic behind asking yourself these questions, again, it starts to take the energy down. It starts to take the intensity off of it. It starts to make you feel less angry, less agitated, do you know, because you're going through this process, again, by deconstructing it. The fourth question is, does this thought make me feel better? Well, again, if we're going to specifically connect it to that example that you've given me, that thought didn't make you feel better when you were thinking that thought. I'm sure that, you know, when even when we're recognizing that we're feeling agitated by a thought that's connected to a feeling, because thoughts create the feeling, do you know that I don't want to brush her hair right now, do you know? And it's making me feel agitated, and it's making me feel annoyed, and it's making me feel impatient. Well, you can connect that feeling to the thought. No, this thought is not making me feel better. The fifth question is, does this thought work for me? Again, how is that thought working for you favorably? By letting that thought take hold in your mind in a way that's making you feel bad, it's not working for you in a positive way. It's working for you negatively. It's making you feel those things that you're feeling that are connected to the thought that you're having. So it's, again, acknowledging that, no, this thought does not make you feel better, and it's not working for you favorably. The sixth question is, am I in control of this thought? Well, as you said earlier, Eileen, how often do we feel that a thought has complete control over us? And that's really how it feels in that moment. Again, you know, it's the trigger. It's somebody, you know, to use your example, which we're workshopping through with the method, is that, you know, in that exact moment, you feel gripped. You feel taken over, because what's happening is your emotion has taken over, which was triggered by a thought. You know, the thought creates the emotion, creates the behavior, creates the reality. So you do feel like you're being controlled by a thought, which in fact you're not. You are in control of that thought. You're in the driver's seat of it. So you
You are letting the thought be in control.
You are exactly, which I talk about in the book. You're allowing yourself to be controlled by a thought that you have the power to change. So you have to really acknowledge the logic in this. And again, it's connecting the dots. And it's a rather simple process of connecting. You know, you think about it as children, when we did there used to be those dots that we would connect on those coloring books to create the unicorn, you know, or create the image. This is what I'm really suggesting, is let's connect the dots so we can see a clear image and a clear thinking, and have a clearer thinking mind. The seventh and final question is, do I want to keep this thought or let it go? Well, that is really where you have taken yourself to at this point. And when you have asked yourself those questions, does this thought originate with me? It either does or does not. Do you like this thought? If you don't, does this thought make me feel better? If it doesn't, does this thought work for me? If it doesn't, and do you feel like you're in control of this thought, which you don't? When you get to the seventh question, I think you really are ready to let that thought go. If you can't answer any of those questions with positive answers, then finally you have to ask yourself, do I want to keep thinking a thought that doesn't make me feel better, that doesn't work for me, that I don't feel that I'm in control of? And do I want to let that thought go, or do I want to keep on thinking that thought? You have a choice.
But
That does, you know, that harks back to the situation with the man that I was talking with you about, the father. That sometimes we are loyal to thoughts even though they're not good for us.
Oh, so true. And again, I go into that in the book. I mean, you know, our attachment, or to use your word loyal, you know, the loyalty that we have to the thoughts that we harbor or we occupy in our mind, do you know, it's like a commitment. We've committed to those thoughts. Even if they are negative, we can be very attached to that negativity. Do you know, maybe holding on to a negative thought, we're more attached to feeling bad about ourselves and the possibility of feeling good. We are more attached to what that thought makes us feel like than the possibility of feeling something that is unknown and foreign to us that might ultimately be better for us. And yet we will hold on to something that is familiar. You know, that saying that the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. I don't really want to use that word per se. I could say the thought that you know, the negative thought you know, might in your mind be, you think, is better for you than a thought that is unknown. And I say positive thoughts are just like waiting in the wings, waiting to come forward, to come up, to reveal things to us that are so magnificent and so miraculous if we just give them a chance. You know, it's like a clogged drain that you just you want those thoughts to come up. They want to come up. They're there waiting to help us so that we can be in our natural stasis, which is to think positive, to be mindful, to be healthy, to, you know, to be happy. You know, yes, it takes work, it takes an effort. You know, and this is what that is a commitment that we need to decide that we want to make to ourselves. We want to stay committed to the negative thoughts that we've grown attached to and even comfortable with, or be willing to let them go and allow a new thought to take its place that might bring forward great, magnificent things in our life. Are we ready for that?
Good question. You know, I'm thinking about this situation with the father, that we often, in my observation, when we're children, we make decisions. And some people are so loyal to those decisions. In the case that I'm talking about, the person's father died when he was young. And the commitment that he made was that he would always keep his family together. So when his child didn't want to connect with him, he doesn't want to drop that thought because it's a commitment he made. How do you unhook a thought like that?
Well, you know, again, that connection of how so many of the thoughts and the beliefs that we carry over from childhood into adulthood, I mean, you know, I've worked with so many people that walk around, you know, with a thought from childhood into adulthood that is fixed, and they're really very solidly fixed and attached to that thought. You know, a lot of the thoughts that this person may have around his son wanting to take that break, or wanting to separate from, you know, or maybe even to individuate away. Maybe his child needs to individuate away from his father, you know, that the way that maybe the man you speak of didn't get a chance to do from his own father. You know, a lot of that is passed down generation to generation, beliefs that are learned and then passed down, and as I said earlier, imposed onto another, to our children, and then our children's children, and our children's children. So, you know, to answer your question specifically, I think that unless that man acknowledged that he has a lot of energy and a lot of fixed beliefs around his son wanting to take that break, or even being able to connect that question, have I heard someone say this thought before? Because I don't know all the thoughts he has around. See, he probably has thoughts that he's telling himself about his son wanting to take that break. And that could be a myriad of things that he's telling himself about his son. You know, and those are the says who questions, like, are those thoughts working favorably for him? whatever opinions and judgments he's formed about his own son wanting to take a break are the thoughts that he continues to tell himself. And even if it's around, you know, keeping that legacy going, as you described about his father, that the family must stay as a family unit, committed, nobody breaks mm-hmm. away. You know, breaking away, sometimes separating, is healthy, and it's important.
I agree.
You know, and we need to let our children leave the nest. And you know, as a therapist yourself, that, you know, a lot of parents can be threatened by that. They're threatened
yes.
by a child that needs to fly and find their own identity and to individuate away from a parent or parents. You know, that it could be the very thing that child needs. That's why exploring this deeper is so important. And even if you had that conversation with your own child, you know, that's very illuminating to sit with your own child and say, I recognize that you have a need to do this. Let's talk about it. You know, what does that mean to you? What does that look like? What does that feel like? You know, if we were able to talk to each other that way and not impose mm-hmm. our beliefs on one another, we might get to know each other in a whole new way. You know, even in the family unit, we all are individuals in that family unit. We all are our own person, even in that family unit. That may not mean that anybody loves any one of you less, but that just to become individuated, to know who you are, you need to take, to use your words, a break from the
yes.
relationship.
Yes, that's a lot to think about and really good. We're up to our second break. Ora Nadrich is helping us to banish negative thoughts and take back our lives. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
So welcome back to Full Power Living. If you're just joining us, our topic today is how to banish negative thoughts, those thoughts that can really damage our lives and our happiness, and what to put in their place. And my guest is Ora Nadrich, who's a certified mindfulness meditation teacher, a certified life coach, and the author of How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. So, Ora, as we were talking right before the break, sometimes there are complications. You can ask these questions and they'll work for most things, but sometimes there are layers, I guess I would say. And you have workshops for that people could get your help specifically. Is that so?
That I have, did you say a workbook?
Workshops. You put the workbook
yes,
in the
I do.
Book.
I do. I have workshops yes. that I do. I've done several workshops, you know, one of them being Living a Mindful Life, which is really introducing how to live, you know, moment by moment with an awareness of your thoughts and how you feel and how to really move through your day in a more seamless way, you know, to be able to you know, acknowledge again when a thought comes in, so that people can really go out into, you know, whether it's their workplace or the relationships with their families, is to how to live more consciously, how to live more mindfully, and how to, you know, really allow for that flow to, you know, your thinking mind, so that when those thoughts come up that are, become obstacles or hindrances, that you know what to do about it. And I'm also very excited. I was just asked to do a workshop next February, from February 13th to the 17th, at this beautiful resort in Costa Rica called Rhythmia. And I will be doing a workshop there called Transforming Negative and Fear-Based Thoughts, Mastering Your Mind. And so you can go online and look at that at Rhythmia. .com. Again, it's in Costa Rica, and I'll be there in February. It's just a gorgeous resort, a wellness retreat that is just beautiful, and I'm so excited to be a part of that. So, yes, I do workshops, and I do so many different things, and I teach meditation and all that good stuff.
And that people can find out about on your website, oranadrich.com, oranadrich.com. And your book, I'm assuming, is also available on Amazon and booksellers everywhere.
Absolutely. Right. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, whatever booksellers or bookstores near you, it can be ordered.
Because one of the things that I really like about your book, it's unusual, is that you've included a workbook toward the end of the book that takes your reader right through the thinking and the steps needed to banish negative thinking. And you suggest replacing the negative thoughts with positive thoughts. Talk to us about that.
Well, I've also created, the book is just chock full of some wonderful, you know, things to do and give you, you know, strengthen your mind with these skills and tools. You know, one of them, of course, being the Says Who Method, which are those seven questions. But I also have something called Release and Replace. And that is that, you know, when you release a negative thought, you can replace it with something positive. You know, and in the workbook, you can start to workshop that. You can actually, you know, there's something about writing things down and seeing it on paper. It's very affirming and it's very tangible and actual when you see yourself going through this process. And that, you know, I also have you do an exercise and what I call working through two conflicting thoughts, or holding two conflicting thoughts simultaneously, which could be something like, I really want to lose weight, but I'm a horrible dieter. You know, it's like your goal and your desire is positive, and you undermine that desire with something negative. And I think, you know, the reason why a lot of diets don't work is because people have this great incentive to lose weight, and then they beat themselves up along the way with negative thoughts, and it can't sustain itself. Do you know, if you want to reach your goal, like dieting, which again, you can do this all in the workbook, let's just say something like dieting is an example, that you have positive, constructive thoughts that support your goal, which is to lose weight, and that becomes a discipline. You know, this whole thing is about disciplining the mind. It's a practice. You know, it's something that you commit to. You commit to it, it commits to you.
And in there you also talk about action thoughts. Tell us about action thoughts.
Well, action thoughts are really that. It's putting, you know, what thought do you want to put into action? Do you know, if you say something again like, I want to lose weight, or I want to get a job, or I want to move, you know, that is a desire that you have that you want to put into action. Well, by putting into action, the only way to put that into action is to support it with thoughts that can, which is, I really want a diet, I'm going to start today, I'm going to be mindful of what I eat, or I'm going to, you know, whether you adhere to a particular diet or you're creating your own diet, I'm going to, you know, an action would be, I'm not going to eat foods that the caloric intake is more than I've decided is healthy for me. It's putting a positive thought into action. It's being proactive, so that you can take a desire, you can take a goal, and you can support it with positive thoughts. And if a negative thought rears its head, which it will, you know, this is not a quick fix. It's not like it's not about the magic pill. That's not what it's about. You you need to be willing to work with it so that if a negative thought does come up, you'll know what to do with the says who method. You'll know how to replace that thought with a positive thought that wants to support your desire and goal so that you can act on it positively.
And that leads us to your forever promise in your title, how one simple question can change the way you think forever. Because it's not just the thinking itself, it's that you have a technique for changing it when it comes up in another way.
Absolutely, yes. And this becomes a, you know, it's going to become very second nature. You know, when you start to do it, it's like building a muscle, do you know? And I want
mm-hmm.
people to know that this is creating a muscle. It's creating a thinking muscle. And that when you look upon it in that way, you begin to change the way you think. And it does change your life, for sure.
So what are, change your, I want you to expand on that. Change your life. If I work at this for a year, how will my life be different?
Well, starting with that, I've worked with so many people that have, I mean, I've gotten such incredible feedback. I've done, you know, workshops. I have private clients. I've done expos. And people that have integrated the Says Who method into their, you know, daily practice. And by the way, I just want to say this. You can ask yourself all seven questions, get familiar with them, have them be in your back pocket, write them on a Post-it, stick them in your wallet. But with time, because you're going to get so good at this, even if a thought pops into your head, a random thought, you might find yourself, you know, getting so versed at this and getting so onto your thinking mind that you might ask yourself just one question. Does that thought work for me? Nope, doesn't. Going to replace it with something that does. Do you know? You get so good at this that you're going to feel really great and you're going to feel really empowered and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
You're going to like it a lot. So, you know, for example, you know, with the changes that you might see, something specifically that I hear right away when people start to integrate this into their lives, you know, they'll say, you know what, Aura, I never even knew that I can ask myself questions about my own thoughts. It never even occurred to me that I could do that. Wow. And you know what I've noticed? My negative thoughts are reducing. And I say, okay, just start to, and again, don't judge it. Don't be harsh on yourself. Even if at the end of the day, when you're taking inventory of your thoughts, which you can do that with the workbook, and you could say, you know what, today I found myself like, and I even wrote it down, instead of the usual negative chatter that occupies my mind a lot, I thought like 5 negative thoughts today. That's big for me. That's huge.
Yeah.
And
wow.
That's the kind of stuff that I'm trying to really let people be aware of, that you become so aware of this shift in your thinking
mm-hmm.
process, and that you start
mm-hmm.
to become aware of that, you know, I've had people that are pretty negative Nancys and negative Neds, and they'll say to me, oh, my God, I never thought this would happen to me, but I am becoming a less of a negative person.
Yeah.
That's gigantic for me. That's big.
Yes. And let's add to that, that also positively impacts your relationships with family and friends and coworkers and so forth. So
it really does. It does,
yeah.
Eileen. It really, you start to see the rippling effect, and you start to see how it seeps into not only how you feel, you start to feel calmer because you're implementing the observation mode. And when we do that, we're not in reactive mode, and you start to really feel the comfort of that you're not like, oh, my God, I'm so plugged into this thought. You know, when you described earlier about the hysterical, you know, that we get so gripped, and you look back to former behavior, and you go, wow, I really see a transformation happening in me, and I
mm-hmm.
like it.
That's such a wonderful place to end, and I just want to say I really love the simplicity that you have brought to this whole huge problem that we have.
Thank you.
Letting our brains be flooded with negative thoughts. That to me, truth is about simplicity. So I'm really delighted.
I agree, Eileen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, simplicity,
so,
simple wisdom.
Yes. So thank you for being here with us today to share
Thanks
that simple
for
wisdom.
Me.
Right.
Wow.
And for those of you who are listening, remember the book is called Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. And Aura's website is auranadrich.com, auranadrich.com. Aura, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Eileen, for having me. I really enjoyed myself.
Great. Me too. So next week, listen to Full Power Living when Eric Wahl-Robinstein talks about his work to wage inner peace with veterans with PTSD. I'm looking forward to having you with us next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Bring your friends and family along. And remember, you can also listen on our archives, and you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. Thank you for listening today. We look forward to having you with us again. Full Power Living's producer is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.